Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. The Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got Coming Around Again with Billboard.com Senior Associate Editor Andrew Unterberger. Andrew will be speaking with JK of Jamiroquai about the 20th anniversary of the 1997 MTV Video Music Awards, where Jamiroquai's Virtual Insanity won 4 Moonmen, including Video of the Year. The guys talk about how the video came to life, JK's memories of the band's big night, and whether the future is made more or less of virtual insanity than he initially predicted. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. So before we get into the podcast, here's a fun fact for you. Virtual Insanity, even though it was a huge MTV hit, never actually charted on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. In fact, it charted on just a handful of our charts. It reached the top 40 on our Hot Dance Club Songs chart, the top 40 on our Alternative Songs chart, only going to number 38, actually, and like number 37 on the Adult Pop Songs chart. The video was hugely popular, of course, on MTV, but that didn't translate to huge chart success or airplay success. Still, Jamiroquai, you know, made a name for themselves around the world and certainly in the U.S., and the album did quite well. Traveling Without Moving, from which this song comes from, actually reached the top 30 on the Billboard 200 and went platinum. So the album did great. The song itself didn't have a huge, you know, life on the charts. That said, obviously made a huge impact for the band and won a slew of awards at the VMAs that year. So let's get into it on Coming Around Again.
Hello, and welcome to Coming Around Again, Billboard's anniversary-themed podcast celebrating anniversaries in the music world. Today we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the 1997 MTV Video Music Awards, which happened on September 4th, 1997. It was a really interesting year for the VMAs, and it was a favorite VMAs of mine growing up. And on the line to talk about them, we have a very special guest this week, and that's one of the guys who was actually one of the biggest stars of those VMAs, and that's JK of the band Jamiroquai. Jay, can you believe it's been 20 years already?
It has, it's flown by. it's amazing. I look back at some of this stuff, you know. I was watching some of the old videos and things the other day, you know, which I don't often do. And I just thought to myself, you know, it was, it seems a long time ago. You forget 1997 is, 20 years. But, you know, I'm still rolling, which is a good thing, you know, so indeed. I'm lucky.
That night, obviously, was a huge night for you guys. Virtual Insanity was kind of your breakthrough MTV hit in the States, had 10 nominations. I think you won 4 of them, including the biggest one of them all, which was Video of the Year. Do you look back at that as being kind of one of the peak nights for Jamiroquai in the 90s?
I mean, there's no doubt. I think, you know, after the first two albums, after Emergency on Planet Earth and Return of the Space Cowboy, you know, I felt we wanted to sort of break out of that. I think there was very much a kind of London concentric kind of, you know, this acid jazz term comes up, you know, all the time. And I think there was very much that vibe, and that's what we were associated with. And I wanted to, you know, I kind of felt it was time to, you know, we had to somehow make an album that was gonna be a bit more special, and have that breakthrough track, you know. And I remember sitting with Toby, God bless him, and doing, you know, getting the track together. And then we kind of left the track, you know. We kind of got the da-da-down, da-da-down, da-da-down. and then we kind of, you know, we kind of left the track. And I remember sort of there were sort of, you know, arguments with the record company at the time, you know, about, I do remember one of the lines that came up in the studio, which was, you know, with Cosmic Girl, which was, you know, it wasn't really a single, and it would only do well in the gay clubs. I did laugh. And so anyway, we didn't play Virtual Insanity at all until the very last minute. And we went in and recorded it and then came out and then played it to the record company. And I still remember the words, which were, it says, "You've done it." I didn't quite get it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, no, you cracked it, you know. The vocals up there is great and it's strong, and so you know, it was that came from being on tour in Japan, and we went up to the north of Japan to Sendai, and it was snowing, and I looked out the hotel room at the city, you know, below, and there was no one on the street. So I went down with one of the band, and we walked around. Eventually, we found this old lady, you know, said, well, you know, "Where is everybody?" And she kept pointing, you know, towards the floor. And yeah, I couldn't see anybody. And anyway, we walked down, down there. So we walked down these steps, and then there's about, you know, 500,000 people down there shopping. So and so that was the inspiration. So I sat in the hotel room, and that was the inspiration for the track, you know, "We'll Live Underground."
Mm-hmm.
So when it culminated in the award, I think, you know, people had nudged me. I mean, it was exciting to be there, and people had nudged me and said, "Oh, I think this is going to be your night." And I said, "Yeah, well, whatever." and then, sure enough, you know, when they said, it was a nice warm feeling
right.
When they turned and went, and the, you know, the video, I still remember it fondly, and it was quite overwhelming, to be quite honest with you, and a real thrill, you know.
So,
fond memories.
So yeah, the video was obviously a gigantic MTV hit at the time, and it was based around some very cool, I don't know if you call it trick photography, but sort of, you know, kind of eye-fooling choreography that made it look like the floor was moving underneath you when really it was the room moving around you, and it involved a lot of kind of stunt dancing on your part, dancing around the room's furniture. I was watching an interview of yours that you did from the night of the VMAs before the awards, and you mentioned that kind of the eureka moment of the video was when you got a call at 3 a.m. that kind of clarified what the video's concept was going to be. What can you tell me about that call if you remember it?
I do remember it. I remember it really well. Yeah, because, I mean, the original with Jonathan Glazier, and mm-hmm. and we sat and had a chat about what we wanted to do, and I mentioned Travelators, you know? I mentioned how, you know, if we could do something with Travelators kind of, you know, moving around a room.
Mm-hmm.
And, we, of course, we knew that was just, you know, we hit it back and forth and sort of realized it was going to be way too expensive and too complex to do that. And then he phoned me back. He said, "I've got it. I've sussed it out." He said, "I've got a. We're going to lock off a camera, and then we're going to move the whole room. The whole room's going to be on wheels, and then we're going to, you know, have the sort of sofas against the wall. And then as you untie the sofa, you know, it looks like the sofa's moving." So when I first got on that, I was like, right, I kind of need to see it, don't get it. So once I saw the initial shot locked off, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So from there on, I kind of ad-libbed, really, the dancing around. I just ad-libbed where I wanted to be. I mean, some of it was really weird because it was like, you know, "Hell, it's a water, man, can eat it all." And then it's like, I've got to be, you know, sort of 20 feet over the other side of the room by the next line. And I'm thinking, how am I going to do that? So, once you started to see that if you had to be in certain parts of the room in order for it to make sense, it started to make sense. Mm-hmm. But when I first got to the set, all you could hear was north, east, Southwest.
Right.
The whole room spinning, and I was it was like a bad night out on alcohol.
So
but it was such a simple idea, and of course, you know, the nice thing about it, I mean, apart from the only other thing that wasn't physical in the video was the crow. So when the crow came in, but the other part was, you know, he said about doing the blood at the end, and I was like, okay, you know, kind of, right, let's go with it. So, of course, but once the blood started, you know, there was no stopping it. And there's a couple of parts, you know, so it was like, we're screwed now. The blood is coming, so this is it. This is the shot, because we've had it.
And did it take a lot of takes? Like, are there a lot of outtakes that you can find of you, you know, stumbling over the couch or tripping into the ottoman or anything like that?
Yeah, funny enough, you know, there aren't, because the whole video is done in four takes.
Okay.
So, in fact, it's only four sections. And as you see the camera go down and lift back up again, that's one section.
Sure.
So split into quarters. So the last section was the crow and the bar. And if you look, you can actually see it. It's not seating. It's like a tap. And the other part that I look at was you know, when the rest of the band came in, and I said, you know, it's imperative not touch the walls, you know,
right.
Otherwise it'll look like a really bad UK soap opera from the 70s we used to have here, where the set used to wobble all the time, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, but it all worked out. And people still come up to me, you know, and they still say, how is it done? And I don't understand how it's done. And there are a couple of magic moments. I mean, one of them being kind of me having the eyes in the back of my head, knowing, sort of feeling that sofa's coming behind me. It's going to run me over. So, in fact, I didn't get run over by the sofas, and I didn't get squashed by any. But, you know, the little twisting move as it comes over, that was sort of like, and I sort of got around on my ankles and twisted out of it. And
right.
It's a cool little move in it. And, you know, and I think it was, you know, I think by then as well, I think really in some senses as well, when I first got to the States, there had definitely been Space Cowboy, you know, the video itself had picked up a bit of notice, you know, some of the dancing and stuff, you know, and the vibe of it. And so Virtual Insanity was a step on from that. And then I think from then on, I think that the trouble is you dig yourself a hole, because then you've got to, you know, keep topping that and coming up with something great. And that's the really hard part of it, you know? And, you know, I mean, I think I've done 30 music videos. So it's sometimes a bit difficult, you know, to come up with other stuff. And some stuff I'm not too comfortable with. I mean, I think the other video that got a nomination, a Grammy nomination, was Feels Just Like It Should,
mm-hmm.
which was another thing that we shot in L.A., but made it look like, I think it was shot on the same set as the, you know, the stuff that you see that sort of looks like New York. You know?
Right.
So, you know, I think all those things, you know, made an impact.
When did you sort of get the sense that this was going to be kind of one of your definitive music videos and sort of a breakout hit? Like, you mentioned in your acceptance speech, you mentioned the MTV exec Patti Galluzzi. Was she sort of your woman on the inside for this? Did she kind of help push you guys through?
Yeah, no. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Patti was super cool and very funny, and you know, and we had a really nice, you know, relationship, and I think it was an exciting year, you know, to have the Grammy as well, which I just couldn't get to at the time for whatever reason it was. And then to have five MTV Awards in the Video of the Year, you know, in the same year, and then in this country as well to get an Ivor Novello, you know, it felt good. It felt good.
What do you remember about the actual performance that night? Like, was it nerve wracking working on the actual conveyor belt?
What
song?
I remember, I just remember Chris Rock saying, "Now this guy was black, he didn't need that shit." Which I still laugh about now. But what I do remember, I tell you what I remember about performance. I tell you what I do remember. I remember because of the way the chords pattern round, ba da bum, 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 and they go round and round, sort of, you know. I do remember that I think Nerves might have got hold of Toby, and he went for, I think we got out of it with a split second, you know, because once you're out of sync with that track, you've had it. And it's quite, you know, and it's it's all got to be boom, up there, up there, up there, up there all the time. There's not a lot of room for breath and not a lot of room for any mistakes. And I do remember Toby sort of just didn't quite come round. There was something, and I kind of went, no, don't let this go wrong live. Don't let this be one of those moments that right. you want to shrink and die.
But he got a handle on it as the song went on, right?
Yeah, no, I did get a handle on it. But it's just those things for me, I have to say, doing those, you know, when it comes to a full live performance, you know, it's no problem, you know. I'm a happy soul. But sometimes with the television stuff and, you know, with the big award shows and any kind of stuff like that, that's when I get nerved out, because I'm not in the, you know, I'm kind of used to sort of getting into it after 10 minutes and doing, I mean, at the moment we're doing, you know, hour, you know, I'm happy doing an hour 40, hour 50 on the stage, you know, I mean, the warm-up gigs over here were kind of 2 hours, 20 minutes. That was before I kind of did my back in, you know. But, you know, I'm coming back up to speed. And so, you know, so I think doing one song or two songs, I've always found really difficult and to get hold of the nerves, you know. So maybe I should start having a bottle of Jack Daniels on the side of the stage.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Do you remember? So, you guys performed, and then I think you won the award almost immediately after that. And then that was basically the end of the show, except that there was also like a really controversial Marilyn Manson performance that ended the night. Do you guys remember sticking around to see that, or were you already off to the after party at that point?
I can't remember much about it. I do remember sitting in the back of a limousine with Sheryl Crow.
Wow. How did that happen?
I don't know, but it was a nice thing.
What did you guys talk
about? I
wish
I could sit in the back of a limousine with Sheryl Crow more often, you know? no, she was great. I know that I was doing what you should do when you've just, you know, won something like that and you're 27.
Sure.
Which is just really enjoying myself, having a great time, right. You know, enjoying New York.
Do you still have the award?
I do. Do you know what? I tell you what, the truth of the matter, I've got the video of the year and the best cinematography of the award. For some reason, I don't know why, I gave two of them away to a couple of the execs, which I don't know whether I regret now or not. and then there was some talk of somebody sort of said to me afterwards, and I still can't understand why, because I sort of did all the choreography myself. But somebody said, do you mind if so-and-so takes the choreography award? And I thought, okay, fine. If you can tell me when you told me to do what, I'm sure. But anyway, I still don't get it up to now. And I always sit there and look at the other two and go, where is that choreography award?
Well, if whoever took that is listening to this podcast right now, be sure to, you know, send it back your way.
Yeah, I hope so. I can't remember who it was, but for the record, unfortunately, there was no job for the choreographer to do. So that was that, really.
Right.
But and mind you, saying all that, there's never been a job for a choreographer in any of the videos. So there you go. Because it's just because I'm just a bit unchoreographable, I suppose. You know, but anyway, but I think every artist is different. Everybody does a different thing. You know, I've always, you know, I used to skate a lot. I've always been a bit of a freestyle kind of guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you guys just released your first album in 7 years. I guess you pronounce it Automaton. Yeah. I think we pronounce it Automaton in the States. It's a really great album. A little bit maybe harder edged than some of the old school Jamiroquai fans might be used to. It's got a little bit more of an electro edge to it, but it's still very much a quintessential Jamiroquai album. But was it important to you guys to kind of mix that, maybe a little bit more of a modern sound with the kind of classic sound that your fans are used to?
Yeah, it was definitely. I think the thing is that people. I've been listening back now to some of the others, partly because for rehearsals, you know, what we're going to do. And if you do listen back to Funk Odyssey and Synchronized, you do hear some stuff that's actually even harder edged than what we've got there. I think what it is that people tend to hear just the singles, you know?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And that tends to be what revolves around in the air. And so people don't get to see that other side of us. So we've always kind of been that, not so much the first three albums, Traveling Without Moving, no. Then after that, in Synchronized, Funk Odyssey, you know, particularly, we started to do that kind of stuff. I mean, we did a track for the film Titan AE, and that's quite, you know, hard-edged. So it's not something that we are, that we haven't done before.
Sure.
But I would say, on this occasion, absolutely, there was a... It was very much a case of, you know, how do we, you know, I have to use the word loosely, but how do we compete with, you know, such digital drums, you know, digital
right, yeah.
world, and yet retain our live thing, because within the live drumming is the fluidity, you know. So we went to SG, so Matt and I, the keyboard player, you know, sat down and basically started everything with electronic drums. Because I think I wanted to harden up the beat. I wanted to harden up the structure of it. So it was really much more defined. Things like automaton, you know, all that kind of stuff in the background. And then later on, we went to Air Studios in Hampstead, and then we got Derek to get on. And, Mick, you know, Gostowski did a super job mixing it, I've got to say. An absolutely fabulous job. He really nailed it for us and really gave us, you know, what we felt, you know, Matt and I, you know, felt. We put a lot of work and a lot of, you know, they've all got a lot of work and a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, a lot of arguments, a lot of, you know, that's crap, you know, this is great. And so he really gave it what we felt it deserved. And so mixing up those two sets of drums and just getting something that was tight and punchy but still had the fluidity and the looseness, you know.
Sure,
so
yeah.
We were really, really pleased with the whole album. I mean, I think, you know, I think each one's different. Rock Dust Lightstar was a different kind of vibe, but I listened to that the other day, you know, and then we sit amongst each other and go, well, was that better than that? Was this better than this? And I think the thing is, I mean, we've always tried to do, you know, no filler tracks, you know?
Sure.
And it is difficult because I kind of like to put my finger in a lot of pies in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be a little bit of rock, I want it to be a bit of the jazz, I want it to be some funk, you know. It can be difficult to get a handle on it, but I think this time round, I think we kind of nailed it. We were kind of happy with what we wanted, you know.
And you mentioned in a couple interviews that the album thematically was inspired in large part by our reliance on artificial intelligence. And obviously it occurs to me that Virtual Insanity talked about a lot of those same themes 20 years earlier, but now we're kind of in the future,
yeah.
The future that you predicted from that song, basically. So looking at it now, 20 years later, is the world that we're living in more or less dystopic than you sort of predicted with Virtual Insanity? Is it more or less crazy than you thought it was going to be?
Well, I you know, in Virtual Insanity, you know, synthesize another strain, you know. It's so insane to synthesize another strain. And, you know, the other day, every single other day on the news, you know, I hear about scientists, you know, beginning to sort of, you know, get the human genome and, you know, and try and, you know, copy things and copy people and copy stuff. And it worries me because I just think that technology is great. And bearing in mind as well, I think we had, you know, this. We did start this album, you know, like 2000. And, well, I think we started, you know, Automaton, and the actual track itself started to come out in about 2013. And then, you know, we had to come off it for a bit for personal stuff. And so we had to sort of leave it for a year. You know, I mean, everybody said to me, shake it on. It's the same as Taylor Swift. It's like, well, unfortunately for you, buddy, I'm afraid to say it was called Shake It On before Taylor put her thing out. But there you go.
I believe you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Thousands wouldn't, but yeah. So, but you know, I'm being silly. But what I'm trying to say is that I do think that I think that the Virtual Insanity, you know, I think touched on a lot of stuff that is happening, and I think that this technology gets in the wrong hands, it's going to be a problem. And I think when it starts, you know, when you start having 7, 8, 9, 10, 20 people in the world who can control this type of stuff, and particularly when it starts being, you know, used and abused on a, you know, perhaps a military scale, you know, I mean, I often, you know, I see the, you know, you don't need to look far to see the footage of the crazy, you know, out of control thing in Boston mm-hmm. Dynamics, you know, with a sort of, you know, the 400-pound, you know, carrying pack on it that suddenly goes berserk. And you kind of, and, you know, and when we started automation, you know, over here we had quite a flood of these sort of programs. There were a lot of programs on the radio and documentaries that, you know, about, you know, and there still are, you know, pretty much every other day almost. In fact, it was so, you know, succinct, and we were so kind of, it felt so on point, you know, that what you know, automaton, you know, what I was trying to say. You know, that I can see a vibe in the future where, you know, where people do start to say, hey, you know what, let's get this guy on the street, you know, who's got nothing. Hey, you know, buddy, you know, how would you like to earn yourself $1,000 today? You know, give me an arm, you know, or do you know what I mean? And then kind of sort of resynthesize. So I think there's a, and I hate to use this word, but there's a kind of, there's a worrying sort of trend to perhaps, you know, taking people who are, you know, less fortunate than ourselves, you know, by the grace of God, and abusing, you know, those people, and maybe, you know, and taking them and making them into the half robot type slaves, you know, in 20, 30 years time. I think the technology is moving so quickly, it's hard to keep a track on it.
Yeah.
But I find it quite scary. And I feel that, you know, we should never ever forget, you know, that human touch. You know, it's something, we're a complex creature. And I have to say, the only hope I have got is when I do see the programs and they go, you know, this is our most advanced robot. And, you know, and every time I watch the television, I think, yeah, go make me a steak, you know. I want a steak. I want fries with it. I want it medium well. I want some fried onions on the side with it. And I want a, you know, a cheese salad.
Yeah, that's the good kind of virtual insanity, certainly.
Yeah, and I need that in 5 minutes. Go do it, robot. So I kind of think you could have a problem with that. You know, when you start to see, you know, actually, in some ways, it's interesting because you then start, you know, I think what's happening is we are losing sometimes, underneath it all, we're losing the wonder of the planet, of us, of nature, of what we are, of how complex and how clever the whole system is, how perfectly it's been done. And we are, to some extent, we're screwing it. Mm-hmm. And the screwing process is being accelerated at such a level, and I find it somewhat frightening. So there you go.
All right. Well, that's an appropriately terrifying note to end on. But thank you so much for coming on, JK. Everyone, check out Automaton. It's available everywhere now. And you know, check out the Virtual Insanity video on YouTube or Vimeo if you haven't seen it in a while. It still holds up. It's still a classic.
And let me just add, the good news is I think we're coming to the States soon.
Oh, really? Excellent. Well, we'll definitely be on the lookout for that.
So look out for us. But yes, it's great to talk. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you,
hello,
sir.
Hello, America.